Now we're holding on. Hey, Dalad, onward bays, 9 lines from the bottom by the 2 dots. Mishnah said that the first part of the Mishnah talked about Nedarim, and it mentioned that a woman who made a neder not to have hanah from other people is able to have leket shikha and peha, because that's not considered hanah from them, because we said there's no tovus hanah involved. The farmer doesn't get to decide which oni should receive his leket shikha and peha. Even as far as ma'aser oni, we said there's a difference whether it's given out in the house, where he does get to pick, versus where it's given out in the granary, where they come and collect it from the granary, where he doesn't. Anyway, the Mishnah digressed to mention by the same token that if a person makes a neder, that Kohanim or Leviim are not allowed to have hanah from me, then they're still able to take his truma or ma'aser, whether he likes it or not. As opposed to if he said these particular Kohanim or these particular Leviim, then those Kohanim and Leviim are in fact off limits to it, but other Kohanim and Leviim can take it. So now we're going to discuss that. So Kohanim and Leviim nois nenin li shaloi chola. So Alma, so not shaloi, yitlu, Kohanim and Leviim nenin li yitlu chola, then they can take the Turma and Maisa bar kofa. So Gemara says Alma, so you see from that, tovas hanah enimam. Evidently, the fact that when a person gives Truma and Meiser, he has the ability, as we said before, to decide which Kohen and Levi to give it to, and we said even that a person conceivably could get money for that, because Yisrael, whose nephew or grandson is a Kohen, could give him some money to do that. Apparently, we're not considering that Mammon to the extent that it would be considered having Hanah from the giver. And therefore, we're saying that even though all the Kohenim and Leviim are also Bahanah for him, nevertheless, we're saying that they're able to take the Truma and Meiser, implying that even though he would have a Tovas Hanah in it, he gets to decide which Kohen or which Levi takes it. Nevertheless, we're not worried about that, and they can take. But Ema Sefer, but then look at the next part of the Mishnah, where it continues, Kohenim Elu Leviim Elu Nenimli, where if he said, these Kohenim or these Leviim are not allowed to have Hanah from me, Yitlu Achedim, then only other Kohenim or Leviim are allowed to take the Truma and Meiser, implying Aval Lahani Loi, implying that the ones that he included in his Neder are not allowed to. Well, why not? Alma Tovas Hanah Mamon. There you seem to have that Tovas Hanah is money. After all, whether he made the neder or not, the fact is, the truma and the meiser has to be given to the kohenim and leviim respectively. So why would there be a distinction whether he said all kohenim and leviim or whether he said only certain kohenim and leviim? Even if the ones that he made the neder on would take the truma and meiser, if we say tovas hanah in a moment, then still there shouldn't be a problem with it. In fact, the Karen Oda points out the fact is the Kohen or the Levi are not supposed to take the Matonis by themselves. The Gemara tells us elsewhere, you're supposed to give it to them. So in that case, wouldn't they have Hanah from the fact that he's giving it to them? And so the answer is that, still, the fact is, if you say Tovas Hanah any moment, then he's just giving them what really belongs to them. And if you're going to say Tovas Hanah any moment, then he's not actually giving them Hanah from it, because it doesn't belong to him anyway. So, what's the deal? So Rav Hoshea says there's no contradiction. The Reisha and the Sefer of our Mishnah go according to 2 different Tanoim. The Sefer is according to Rebbe, who holds Tovas Hanah Mamon. Therefore, if you were to give the Truma or Meiser to the Kohenim that you made a neder that they shouldn't have Hanah from you, then they would be having Hanah from you, because they'd be having a monetary Hanah from you, because you have the choice. You had the choice of giving it to them or to somebody else, and that Tovas Hanah is worth money. So therefore, that would be why the Sefer would be according to Rebbe, and therefore saying that you can't give it to those Kohenim and Leviim, you have to give it to other ones. The Reisha is according to Rabbi Yosef Yehuda, but Rabbi Yehuda, who does not hold Tovas Hanah Mamon, so therefore it's no problem. In other words, it's true. The Reisha and the Sefer of the Mishnah contradict each other. If it were all according to Rebbe, we would say there's no difference. If it was all according to Rabbi Yosef Yehuda, we would say there's no difference. But one part is according to Rebbe, and one part is according to Rabbi Yosef Yehuda. We don't like to do that, but sometimes we have to do that. And where do we see, says Rav Hoshea, that they have such a machlokas? The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Hagoinu Tivoi Shochaveri. Suppose a person steals tevel that belongs to somebody else. Now the tevel, they haven't yet taken truma and maaser from it, so the person it belonged to was not allowed to eat it. And now the ochloi, now if the ganav eats that produce while it's still tevel, meshalom loyds may tivoy, he has to pay the entire value of the tevel, even though that includes truma and maaser, which the owner wouldn't have been able to keep any, wouldn't have been able to keep anyway. Okay, to be exact, the Ran says he doesn't pay the whole thing at the value of regular produce. We figure out for the percentage that would have been the truma and maaser, we figure out the value of truma. We've learned before that truma is generally worth less on the market than chulin because only kohenim can eat it and has to be kept tahor, and if it becomes tamei, then you can't eat it anymore. So therefore, the price of truma is usually lower than that of chulin. So fine. So you figure out, let's say 2% of it for truma and 1% of it for trumas meiser is going to be off limits and restricted to kohenim. So therefore, that 3% is going to be worth less, and then the rest of it, the other 97%, which is orim, are allowed to eat, is going to be the normal price. So, and that would be how much the ganav has to pay. Divrei Rebbe, that's what Rebbe says. Rebbe Yosi, Rebbe Yehuda Omer, Eina Meshalem Ela Dmei Chulin Shavoy. Rebbe Yosi, Rebbe Yehuda says, no, you only pay the value of the chulin. So according to Rebbe Yosi, Rebbe Yehuda, if he stole a hundred bushels and ate them, then he's only going to be paying 97 bushels because the other three are going to be truma and trumas maaser. Or maybe even less, actually. Maybe you would consider, actually, you do, according to the Yosef Rebbe Yehuda, you'd also have to take out the maestros. It's true that the maestros are allowed for Zorim to eat. The fact is, you do have to separate them out and give them to the Levi or give them to the Oni, etc. So according to him, you wouldn't be paying for the whole hundred. You'd be paying 79% or whatever once you subtract the various trumas and maestros. So Rabbi Hoshea says, my love, v'hokam itzli. Well, doesn't that mean, shouldn't we say, that the underlying machlokas between Rebbe and Rebbe Yosef Yehuda is just that? The Rebbe sava tovus hanah mamon. So Rebbe holds that tovus hanah is considered mamon. So therefore, that's true, the truma and maaser doesn't belong to the farmer in the sense that he can't eat them, but he has that tovus hanah because he can pick what kohen and what levi to give it to. So therefore, according to Rebbe, then, the ganav should at least be paying that tovus hanah for that amount of the food. But Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda just saw a tovus hanah any moment, and Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda would hold that no, it's not. So in that case, if we understand them to be arguing on that point, well then we can relate that point to our Mishnah, and we can say that they have the same argument in our Mishnah, and one part of our Mishnah is like Rebbe, and the other part is like Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda. Or the other way around, the ratio would be like Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda, and the safer would be like this. However, the Gemara says loy. That's not a valid proof. Not necessarily are they in fact arguing on that point of Tovus Hanah or not. You could say the Kula Alma Tovus Hanah any moment. Maybe both of them agree that Tovus Hanah any moment, which is in fact the halacha. So even though it is true, practically speaking, that he is allowed to get paid for a Yisrael, can give him some money in order to give the truma to his nephew or to his grandson, that is not considered in halacha, that potential value is not considered mamun in halacha to the extent that a ganav should be chayav for taking it. So in that case, what is the machloikas between Rebbe and Rabbi Yosef Yehuda? Ela halacha b'matonis shalahu mukamifti. The machloikas between Rebbe and Rabbi Yosef Yehuda is on the question, matonis, which have not yet been taken out from the produce, are they considered as if they were already taken out? So Rebbe is going to say, since the truma and maaser has not been taken out, then they're the equivalent of the chulin in it. We don't consider that they already have an identity. We consider that they're part of the chulin. Now, it is true, of course, the farmer can't eat those chulin until he takes out truma and maaser from them. But nevertheless, Rebbe says that the truma and maaser does not yet have an identity. We don't consider as though it was taken out. So therefore, there's nothing to subtract. When we figure out how much ganav has to pay, then there's nothing to subtract. Whereas Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, is going to say that we consider as though they were already taken out, And once they were already taken out, once they're already designated, then of course the farmer has no reshus over them, and then they belong strictly to the Kohenim of Levim. So sort of Yosef of Yehuda is going to say, even before they were taken out, we treat it in a way as though they already were, and therefore now when we're figuring out how much the Ganav has to pay, then we have to subtract, that. The Rosh and Tosfos over here refer to actually, Gemara in Kiddushin that says that we're talking about a special case over here. That when we say that they're arguing about Matanas Shalayhumu, they're actually arguing about a special case where you have a Yisrael Yarshin Mistevel from his grandfather who was a Kohen. Now let's think about it. If a Kohen owns produce, yes, he has to take out the Truma and the Maaser, but he's allowed to keep them for himself. Truma he himself can eat. The Maaser, okay, the Truma's Maaser he can keep for himself. The rest of the Maaser he'd have to give to a lady. So the point is, now when this Yisrael Yarshin bit from his grandfather, from his mother's father, now he's not allowed to eat the Terumah because he's Yisrael, but nevertheless it belongs to him to the extent that he's able to sell it to a Kohen. So now the argument would be, we learned in Yevamos as well. Anyway, we had that at one point in history, Ezra made a takana that Kohenim are able to get Maaser Rishon as well. We talked about over there in Yevamos, so we're talking about that they get it, that only they get it and the Levium don't get it anymore. Did we say that they can get it or the Levium can get it? Whatever the case, point is that, so yes, you can have a Kohen owns a stack of grain and he actually owns all of it because, he has to designate the Truma and the Maaser in it, but after that he's able to eat it all himself. So now if his grandson, Yisrael Yarshins it from him, then he's able to, then that grandson also owns all of it. The difference being that he can't eat it, being a Yisrael, but he can sell it to other people. So that would be the specific case, the Gemara explains in Kiddushin, where Rebbe and Rebbe Yosef of Yehuda argue on this point of, Matanas Shleihu. So the point is that we can say that we can say it's not a matter of whether they're arguing about Tovus Hanah, they're arguing about Matanas Shleihum. And we can show, therefore, that in that case, they're not also arguing about Tovus Hanah Mammon, because E Tovus Hanah in a Mammon, because if Tovus Hanah is the, the Gemara asks the question. So the Gemara asks the question, if that's what you're telling me, the underlying machloikas is about Matanas Shleihumu, then how is that going to work? The E Tovus Hanah in a moment, if you're still telling me that the Tovus Hanah doesn't count for anything, Mali Humu, Mali Elohumu, then who cares whether they were taken out or not? Either way, the farmer does not own them. If Tovus Hanah in a moment, so why would we say that the, why would the Ganav have to pay the same thing? In fact, Tosfos says, now if our Gemara, Tosfos says, if our Gemara had followed the explanation there in Kiddushin about that we're talking about a specific case over here where Yisrael Yarshin this pile of grain from his grandfather, a Kohen, then the Gemara wouldn't ask the question, because then of course it's not just a matter of Tovus Hanah, then he has actual ownership over the grain and he's able, when he sells that Truma to Maaser to the Kohen, he's able to sell it at the full price that Truma and Maaser would fetch. Unlike a regular case where he didn't yaushin it from his grandfather, where he's only able to sell it, where at most we would say all he has on it is Tovus Hanah, the tiny amount of money that somebody might give him to give it to a particular Kohen. If he yaushin it from his grandfather, then it wouldn't be like that. So Tosfos says, you know what, in fact, if all Gemara had used that answer, then yeah, it wouldn't ask the question. But the authors of Or Gemara thought that that answer was a bit of a dofek, to say that Yosef of Yehuda and Rebbe are arguing about that one specific case where Yarshin from his grandfather, and therefore Or Gemara is assuming that this rule about Matanas Shleihumu, about this machlokas between them, is more general. The Rosh says a different answer, that actually what it is the Gemara over here didn't understand what the Taritzin had answered. The Gemara had asked that we could say that they're all doing Matanas Shleihumu. So the obvious answer would be yeah, Matanas. So we would say yes, Matanas Shleihumu only in that specific case. But then the Gemara is asking, so what's the difference? Mali humu, mali lehumu. So the stomach of the Gemara, the Taritzin, the one who's giving the answer, realized realizes that, you know what, you Machshon obviously didn't understand what I was getting at. If you understood the part that we learn in Kedushin that we're talking about over here is about a specific case where he yarshin from his grandfather, you wouldn't even ask the question. But you know what, fine, I'm not gonna address your question. Instead, I'm gonna answer your question in a different way, which the Gemara goes on. Ella, so rather we can answer, Hainu Taima de Rebbe, we can say that after all, we can say that for our purposes, it doesn't really matter. We could learn either way. We could say Torah Sanah Mammon, or we could say Torah Sanah Eni Mammon. But the reason behind the Machloikas of Rebbe and Rebbe Yossi Rebbe Yehuda is a different one. Now, with all of this, by the way, we're still not answering the contradiction in our Mishnah. So we're going to get back to that afterwards. But right now, we're saying that as far as Rebbe and Rebbe Yossi Rebbe Yehuda, their case where a person steals a pile of grain that includes potential truma and miser, in fact, we can say we could understand the machlokas either way. We could understand that on the basis of Torah Sanah Mammon, we could understand that on the basis of Torah Sanah Eni Mammon. So what happens? Ela Hainu Taima de Rebbe. So what we can answer is that Rebbe, so why is Rebbe saying that you penalize the ganav and make him pay the whole thing? Very simple. The Chachamim penalized the ganav, so in the future he doesn't steal. If he knows that he can steal a pile of grain and get away with a certain percentage of it, that we're going to say that. So if we're going to say Tovus Hanah Einim Mammon, so then so what is that? So what does that mean? In other words, that 20% or so of this grain does not actually belong to the Balabais, and therefore the ganav shouldn't have to pay it. Well, then he has less incentive not to steal in the future. So he'll go steal, and he's only paying 80 cents on the dollar or so. So then, so Rebbe says, no, instead penalize him, make him pay the whole thing, or at least for the truma and meiser, fine, make him pay the reduced value of truma and meiser, but make him pay it. He's still paying something for the entire 100 bushels, and that way he'll have less of an incentive to steal in the future. So we would say,
I'm sorry. If this guy is stealing, you're gonna trust him that he's gonna pay good miser?
No. You're talking about two different people. You're talking about Reuven owed a pile of grain. Shimon stole it from him. So now we're talking about what are we making Shimon pay? Are we making Shimon pay the value of the full 100 or something for each of the 100? Some of them at the value of Hulin, some of them at the value of Truma. Or are we saying Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda is saying that no, we're making Shimon pay only about 80. So it's not a matter of do we trust him. The farmer is Reuven. He's the one who owns it. Shimon is the one who stole it. Besides which also, one doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the other. There is a Gemara. There are Gemaras in Bechoris and in other places in Shas that discuss this whole question. When a person is choshud, when a person is suspect over doing one Aveda, do we necessarily suspect them of doing other ones? Not necessarily do those have one to do with the other. Of course, it might be, we know nowadays, even, you know, you have people with a bird and mind the pious, you know, and unfortunately they're dishonest in business. So it was similarly in those times. You could have a person who's careful with truma and meiser, but not careful with stealing, or vice versa.
But whatever you say about whether it belongs, he's fined or he's not fined on these 20%, he still stole everything, the 20% and the 80%.
80%, there's no question we're making him pay. Both Rebbe and Rebbe Yosef Yehuda are agreeing to that. Rebbe would say, even if you say Tovus Hanah Eni Mammon, meaning that the farmer does not really have any monetary interest in that 20% at all. It doesn't belong to him at all. The Kohenim and Levim can take it from him. Fine, even if he gets to choose which one to give it to, that's not considered to be worth money. Rebbe would say that, so Rebbe Yosef Yehuda would say, okay, well then make him pay the value that he actually stole from Reuven. Reuven owns 80% of this, therefore make Shimon pay 80% to Reuven. Rebbe is going to say, if you do that, there's less of an incentive for Shimon to not steal in the future. Make him pay the whole thing, even though he could come to Beis Din and say, what are you talking about? I only deprived Reuven of 80 bushels. Nevertheless, we're going to tell him, pay up the whole 100, and that way, hopefully, it'll make him think twice before doing this again. And then we could go the other way around. We could say, the other possibility is we could say that Tovus Hanah is Mammon. So then we could say, according to that, we would say, on the contrary, Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda could say that you make him pay, that you make the Ganav pay only the value of the Chulin. On the contrary, he says, the Chachamim may have a reason to penalize the Balabais, so that he doesn't keep around his Tevel longer than necessary. Like this, it would be better if he gives his Truma and Meiser, if he separates Truma and Meiser and gives it as soon as possible to the Kohenim and Levim, rather than keeping it around So therefore, if it got stolen from him, I mean, obviously you could conceivably have a case where he just finished harvesting it, and the next day before he has a chance to do truma and ma'aser, it gets stolen. But normally, we're going to assume that, you know, the further along we are in the season, the more likely it is that somebody might break in and steal it. So in that case, Rabbi Yosef is saying there's a high likelihood that the Balabayas delayed giving this truma and ma'aser, and therefore he says, so we're going to say to the ganav, even though it is true that you deprived him of Tovas Hanah on 20% of this, because he could have decided what Kohen and what Levi to give it to, and he could have even gotten money for that. Nevertheless, we're not going to make you ganav pay for that, because on the other hand, we're saying the Balabayas did something wrong by putting himself in a situation where his tevel could be stolen in the first place without Truma and Meister having been separated from it. So it comes out, by the way, the Ran and the Rosh are explaining, actually, that what the Gemara has just given is two answers over here. We're saying, if Tovas Hanah Mamon, then Rebbe's position is clear why we make Ganav pay the full thing, and we need to explain Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda. And if we say Tovas Hanah Einam Mamon, then it's the other way around. Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda's position is clear, and we have to explain Rebbe's. There is in fact an explanation. The Mefarish says, and the Rashba also says the same thing, that this is really one big answer. We're saying Tovas Hanah Einam Mamon. Nevertheless, according to Rebbe, we're making the Ganav pay all of it. And according to Rabbi Yossi, that it's true, you could conceivably say you should penalize the Ganav. On the other hand, opposing that, you have a Svara to say don't penalize him. On the contrary, penalize the Balabas. And therefore, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yossi says that outweighs the other consideration, and therefore that's what we do. So you don't have to say, like the Ran said, that we're talking two different answers over here. Could be the Gemara has concluded that, after all, Tovas Hanah is ain't a moment, like we said before, and still they would argue which consideration outweighs the other. In any case, the point is we're left with, so if we understand the machlokas of Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Yehuda, and Rebbe that way, then it has no bearing on our Mishnah. In the case where a person made a neder, make that Kohenim and Levim in general, or that specific Kohenim and Levim, are also to have anah from him, where the Mishnah had drawn a distinction between them, so Rav Hoshea had given the answer that follows these two Tanoim. Now that we're saying that, no, we can understand the machlokas of the Tanoim in a whole different way that doesn't bear on our Mishnah. Well, then we're back to the question, what's going on in our Mishnah? Why is it in the Reisha that the Kohenim and Levim can take the Truma and Maisa Bal Kochai, versus in the Sefer, where we're saying, give it to other Kohenim and Levim? So the Gemara says, Rava Omar. So Rava says, in fact, we're going to say that Tovas Hanah is Mamon. Shiny Truma, but Rava says it's different with the case of Truma, the Hainu Taima de Yitlu Al Kochai, the reason why the Kohenim and Levim are able to take against his will, Mishum de Truma Lechazi El Kohenim, because the fact is that Truma is suitable only for Kohenim. Zorim are not allowed to eat it. The Kivin de Ka'osu, the Misra Alayu, since he's coming to Asu, the Truma on them, Shavya Afra Ba'alma, in effect, what has he done? In effect, he's made it like Hefti. He's made it like dust. So because after all, what's the deal? He can't eat it himself. He can't even sell it because it doesn't truly belong to him. Only in that unique case that we talked about before, where he yashin it from his grandfather, a Kohen, would we say that he actually owns it. Other than that, he doesn't actually own it. So therefore, having tried to assert it on the Kohenim, all he's done is he's made it like Akra Ba'alma, so he's been master it. So in the Reisha, since there are no Kohenim and Levim who he's allowing to take it, then it means, in effect, he's saying that, he's making it Akra Ba'alma, he's making it Hefker. That once it's Hefker, then they can come and take it. As opposed to in the Sefer, them taking it is not considered Hanah, just like we learned earlier in the Masechta, when you have a case, for example, where Shimon is also to have Hanah from Reuven, and we always told that Reuven can't have Hanah from Shimon, whatever. Anyway, the point is that we say he can be master some food of his, and then the other one can come and take it. So applying that over here, the same thing. Once it's Hefker, then they can take it, and it's not considered Hanah. On the other hand, in the Sefer, since he said only particular Kohanim and Levim, so he hasn't made it after the Alma, because obviously he's still retaining some rights, some monetary rights over it. The Tovus Hanah, that he could choose other Kohanim and Levim who he did not include in his nether to give it to. Well, very well then. And the Kohanim whom he included in his nether can't take it because he specifically put it off limits to them, but he didn't make it after the Alma because he still left other Kohanim and Levim that he's able to give it to. The Tosfos Yom Tov, by the way, points out that, that still, he wouldn't be allowed, even in the case of the Reisha, where we're saying he's making a hefker, he wouldn't actually be able to give it via dayim, he wouldn't be able to pick it up and give it to the Kohanim or the Levi, they would have to take it themselves. And then he says that's the Ran might learn that way, but Beis Yosef actually would say that, he actually would be able to give it to them, in person. The fact is, the reason why the Mishnah uses the expression Yitlu Baal Kochoi is because practically speaking, since he made a neder, they didn't want them to have hanah from him, he's not going to want to give it to them, but he would be allowed to. La halacha, that's not considered giving them hanah, because either way, according to the answer of the Gemara over here, we're saying that in the Reisha, he's giving them something which anyway is hefker. So the Ram discusses over here an interesting point, an interesting side point that comes out of this. If a person... Now let's talk about a different case. So here we're saying that the truma and the truma's meiser is off limits to him because as a Yisrael he's not able to eat it. He has to give it to the Kohanim and he has to give it to the Kohanim. So to him it's not considered since he made it off limits, since he tried to make it off limits with his neder to the Kohanim, then therefore the result is it's after the Baalma means in effect he made it hefker. So the Ran says, now what would be in a regular, suppose, forget about Truma and Meiser, suppose a person has Peiros and he declared them Hefker, or not he declared them Hefker, he declared a nether that he's not allowed to have Hanah from those Peiros, well, then it would mean other people can come and take those Peiros. Because after all, in effect, we're saying in Or Gemara, he made them Hefker by doing that. The same way as by declaring this Truma and Meiser off limits to Kohanim, in effect, he declared it Hefker, because we're saying it's off limits to him already, and now not being able to even decide what Kohen and Levi to give it to because he made them all mudra hanah from him. So now we say that it's completely hefker. Well, by the same logic, if he were to say about some regular payers, these are Kohenim to me and I'm not allowed to have hanah from them, then other people would be able to take them because again, they'd be hefker. The Ran continues, couldn't he be matu neder? The fact is, he hasn't been matu neder yet. So as long as he is, then, they would be able to take it. Now the Ran continues. Now we've learned before that the Chacham is Oikra and Neder Meikra, that when you matter Neder, the Chacham takes away the Neder as though it never existed. So therefore he says that if in the end this person who made the Neder were to go and be matter Neder, then in fact the other people would have to reimburse him for the fruit that they took during that time. So now, because now it comes out, in effect, that there was no Neder in the first place. And then he goes on to say that in that case, in the case of Truma, in our mission over here, it's true you could be Matur Neder on the designation of that Truma, but nevertheless, we don't have to be concerned that he might. So if it is true that if he were to be Matur Neder about having designated this part as Truma, then it is true that would be a valid Ataras Nedarim, and at that point they would have to reimburse him. But until that happens, they're entitled to take, which is why our Mishnah is saying that Yitlu Baal Kochoi. Now that is all. So the Ran says all of that was according to the Rashba. However, the Ran says I don't know about that. I mean, the fact is. In that case where he was matur neder, and the Rashba is saying that now we consider as though the neder was never there in the first place, therefore they'd be required to reimburse him. I don't know if that really is so. The Ran says the fact of the matter is it's true that Issur goes away as a result of Ataras Nedarim, but the other people made a valid kinyan on this property that still exists. So why should they have to reimburse? So the Ram says, no, I don't think so. I think that even if he was Matur Neder, they wouldn't have to reimburse him. So an interesting side thing that comes from all of this, by the way, is the interesting question. Based on all of this, we're saying that if a person makes a neder not to have hana from something, or basically if something is also hana to a person, is it considered that he owns it? According to what we're saying over here in the Ran, that it comes out, according to the Rashba and the Ran's own opinion, it comes out that if a person has something in his possession which he's not allowed to have hana from, in this case because of his own neder, then in fact it's not considered that he owns it at all. That is why the Rashba is saying that in effect it's hefter and anybody can take it. There is actually a good deal of interesting discussion about that. Among the Achronim about that question of when you have something that's also bahana, is it in fact something that you're not able to actually show him? You can talk about it. Is it something that you push it not allow, that you're not able to have ownership of it, or is it that you're able to have ownership of it, but you just the Torah leaves it off limits to you? There's a tosfos elsewhere that implies, for example, that that a person could have ownership of Orla, even though Orla is also bana, but nevertheless, so there's a tosfos elsewhere that implies that the person could conceivably own it. And then there's a lot of different explanations of Rishonim about different possibilities, whether in fact we would say that it is possible to own something of Issur Hanah or not. And then you have, for example, when it comes to Chametz for Pesach, is that your chametz for Pesach is also bahana? Is it that in fact the person is not considered to own it b'chlal, or is it that he owns it but the Torah keeps it off limits to him? An interesting bit of lumbus about all that. Okay, Mishnah says, koinam she'eni oisal pi'ada. Suppose that a woman makes a neder, a koinam, that I won't do work for the mouth of your father. So in other words, in effect, she's saying the neder is any work that I do, any food I make or whatever, will be also to your father to eat as though there was a coin on it, as though it was a korban. Or she's saying that the same thing, but she's saying as far as your father, her husband's father. She's saying that I'm making a koinam, that anything I make will be also bahana to my brother or to your brother. Any yachal lahofer, in all those cases, he's not going to be able to be, the husband is not going to be able to be made for the neder, because it's not inui nefesh. There's no affliction to her in not doing that. It's not dvorim shebeina levena. It doesn't affect the relationship between her and her husband, because it's between her and a third party. So therefore, he can't be made for it. What about if she says she'eni osal picha? What about if she says that whatever I make, whatever food I make or whatever, will be also to your mouth? And it doesn't have to be food, Dafka. You know, we learned in Ksubas, for example, that she's responsible to spin a certain amount of wool, for example, and it goes towards the household expenses. We sell it and we use it towards the household expenses. So now if she makes a neder that will be also to her husband, Ainet Sorech Lahofer. So the Tanakhama says the husband does not need to be mefer because she's meshubed to him. She has a shibud to him to do that work. So therefore she doesn't have the ability of putting it off limits to her husband. So therefore there's no need to even be mefer the neder at all.
Didn't we learn that you cannot penalize someone else through your own neder?
No, on the contrary. We're going to discuss in the Gemara, for example. I'm perfectly able to say that my payrus are going to be also to you, because even though you don't belong to me, my payrus do. So the Gemara is going to ask actually a different point. The Gemara is going to ask that her maisi adel don't exist yet. So how is she able to be makdish them? But there's no question. I can answer my payrus to you. What I can't do is I can't answer somebody else's payrus to somebody else. I can't say your payrus are also to you, because that's meaningless. But I can say my payrus are also to you, or I can say your payrus are also to me, because as long as you have ownership of either the person bound by the neder or the item on which the neder is hal, then either way it works.
What did she say exactly?
So in this case, she said, a koinam, that any of my maisi yodei, anything that I produce, will be also to your mouth, will be also under a neder for you to eat, or for you to consume, or to have benefit from. So now that's what we're going to discuss in the Gemara. The problem is, so the first question is, does her Maisiya there belong to her? The Tanakhama is saying that it doesn't anyway, so therefore she's not able to make a neder to aser it to her husband because she has a shibud to give it to him, or to make it for him in the first place. In fact, we learned a few times in Ksubas that Rav Huna holds that a woman is able to say to her husband, "Eini nizonis for any osa. I don't want your support, and I don't want to do my siyada anymore. I'll support myself." Fine. So once she does that, then it's true. She's not meshubet to him for my siyada anymore. But until she does that, fact is that until she does that, she is meshubet to him. Therefore, the Tanakhama says the husband doesn't even need to be made for the neder. It would be the equivalent of saying that your payers are also to you, which is meaningless. On the other hand, continues the Mishnah, Rabbi Akiva Omer Yofer, Rabbi Akiva says, no, the husband does have to be made for that neder. Shema Tadif, all of Yosemin Aroyla, because she might end up making more than the minimum amount. We learned in Ksubas there's a certain minimum amount that she has to produce of spinning wool, for example. She might conceivably make more than that. And Rabbi Akiva holds that excess would belong to her, so the neder could be chal on it, and it's going to be very difficult to say that he should only have hana exactly to the penny from what was from the regular amount, and not to touch the hadafa at all. So therefore, it would be dvarim shebein levena. Meanwhile, the Tanakhama holds, says the Rab, that the Tanakhama holds that doesn't matter. The hadafa belongs to him in the first place, so there's nothing to talk about. The same way as she can't ask to him the basic amount. The same way she can't ask to him the hadafa as well. In Ksubas, by the way, we learned that this that Rabbi Akiva says that he would have to be made for her is talking about specifically what's called Hadafa Ayded Chak, where she really pushed herself beyond the regular limits in order to produce that extra. So now Rabbi Akiva is going to say that because she pushed herself extra beyond what she could have been expected to do, then therefore it belongs to her. The Chachamim are going to disagree. And the Mishnah continues, Rabbi Yochanan Nuri Yomer, Yoffer, Rabbi Yechman Nuri says there's a different reason why he should be made for. Nothing to do with the basic amount versus the Hadafa, but there's another point. Fine, he says, I agree with the Chachamim that the Hadafa also belongs to the husband, and therefore she can't ask it to him. But the problem is, Yoffer, still he should be made for the neder, Shema Yigarshana, because what happens if the husband divorces her, and then of course the neder is going to be Chal, or Tiya Surah Olav, and she's going to be Osir to him to remarry, because, Once they get divorced, the neder is going to be chal, because again, since he was made for only dvarim, since he was only dvarim shebein levena, then therefore, once they get divorced, then the neder is fully chal. Now, if they get married, it's impossible for him to avoid having hana from anything she does around the house. So therefore, Rabbi Yechon Manuri says, he better be made for the neder now, as dvarim shebein levena, and that will make it that now in the future, if they do get divorced, he'll be able to remarry her. So in fact, what does the Tanakhama hold? So the Ran says that the Tanakhama would say that that maybe not. Maybe the neder is not chal after the time they get divorced. Maybe it's only since the neder is not chal now, it's not going to be chal later either. Even though it's dvarim shebeina lebeina, we learned Udiu and Impera that possibly then it only takes effect once it's become a certainty that they're not going to get remarried, such as if she married somebody else, where now she's also to remarry her first husband.
We should discuss it.
Wait, one at a time. Say what? It's fine. Now they
go ahead, Ellie.
Okay, thank you. With the discussion, do we say she could say, I'm not going to eat your food, and you're not going to have enough
of
my food.
Yes, you could say any nizonis veini oseh, but until she does that, first of all, that was only according to Rav Huna. According to other Amirim, she wouldn't be able to in the first place. But even according to Rav Huna, fine. If she does that, then fine. From now on, we have different rules. But up until then, she's meshubah to her husband.
Then the fire wouldn't help.
No, so, well, that's the thing. So the Tanakhama says you don't even need Hafara because she's Meshuvad. So what do you need Hafara for? They say it would be like assuring somebody else's payrus on somebody else. Rabbi Akiva is saying you have Hadokah to concern yourself about. Rabbi Yechaman Nuri says you have what to concern yourself about after they get divorced. But other than that, they all agree with the basic idea that the basic amount that she's making for him, she's Meshuvad to, and therefore there no Hafara would be needed for that. Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Yechaman Nuri are just pointing out other considerations that might make it useful to do Hafara.
Right, if it would mean that they have to get divorced, they won't have to remarry. That's a good stand for her in Bezdin
keep in mind how Taras Nedarim requires her das. She has to agree that she wants to be Matanedu. Hafara is we're talking about the husband can be made for it whether she likes it or not.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. So now, Ramosha, you want to ask him?
Regarding the get, the situation of the get, it seems to me that if you say that the neder is chal after he gives the get is not really a guest krisis where there's absolutely no connection between the husband and the wife after the get is given. Since the neder is still chal after the get is given, is the get really valid?
That's a fair point. I guess we would say that, I mean, it's not, I guess we would have to answer that the issur that there is over here has nothing to do with the gerushin per se. It's more that it has to do with the neder. I mean, after all, let's say he wasn't made for the neder. What if he was mekayim the neder? Then it would be in effect even while they're married. So all it is we're saying even when he's made for the neder, it still comes back into effect later on. But that's not necessarily considered. That's a very good point. I'd have to look into that. But I guess we would have to say that it's not really a lack of krisus, because it's not directly something that survives from their marriage, but rather on the contrary, something else that was sort of hanging over there and now takes effect after their marriage. I mean, think of it. Let's say, for example, forget about this case. What if after they got divorced, a woman says, "I'm making a neder. I'm never going to have enough from you." Obviously, we wouldn't say that takes away from the krisus, because the get itself was a get. Now after that, you have a side thing that comes in. I guess this would be the same kind of thing. But it's a good point. I guess we have to research it a little.
But that's a very important point, isn't it?
It's true. I'll have to look into it. All right, let's go. Mm-hmm. So the Gemara says, Amos Shmuel halacha k'Rabbi Yechon ben Nuri. So in this three-way machloikas in the Mishnah, Shmuel says the halacha is like Rabbi Yechon ben Nuri, that he should be made for the neder, because if he divorces her, he won't be able to be married. So the Gemara asks the memory to discover Shmuel other makdish davar shalei bala olam. So are you telling me that Shmuel holds that a person can be makdish something that doesn't exist yet? Because after all, we're talking about that exactly that. She made a neder about something and we're saying that neder is going to be chal only after she gets divorced. And at this point, when she makes the neder, then that thing doesn't exist yet. Udamini. But the Gemara says in that case, I have a contradiction. A Mishnah in Ksuba says, "Hamakdish Maisi Deishtoi." If a man is makdish the Maisi Adeha of his wife, Harezu Oisava Ichelas, she's still allowed to continue working and she's still allowed to continue eating because she has the ability to say Eini Nizonis Veini Oisa. So actually, what we had over there was we had a machlokas between Rav Huna and some other chachamim. Rav Huna had said she could say Eini Nizonis Veini Oisa, therefore, so her Maisi Adeha is not completely under a shibud to her husband. The other explanation was that we're talking about where the husband anyway has not been giving her Mizonis, and therefore the din is that now she's entitled to be Oisa Vaichelis because her husband's not supporting her. Either way, the point is that there is, so however we explain that Mishnah, according to either of these two possibilities, the point is we have a scenario where her Maisi Adeha are not Meshuvah to him. And then the Mishnah continues, Vaham Moiser. Now, what happens if he's makdish only the Moiser, which is the same as the Hadafa that we said in the Mishnah, extra amounts that she makes be up above and beyond the basic amount that she's supposed to make. Reb Meir Oymah Hekdish. Reb Meir says that the husband is able to be makdish. Reb Yechon Asanlo Oymah Cholin. Reb Yechon Asanlo says that no, it's Cholin, because not because it doesn't belong to him, but because it's Dovah Shaloi Balo, because it doesn't exist yet. So the mayor is going to say, I don't care about that. You can be makdish something that doesn't exist yet. But Rabbi Yechon Asanlo says that you can't. Again, the Ran points out over here that again, there's a couple of different possible ways of understanding of this. One way of understanding was even after we learned in Ksubas, besides that the husband has to support his wife, he also has to give her every so often ma'a kesef, one silver ma'a, that she's going to use for small expenses like laundry or the bathhouse or what have you. And in return for that is why, according to one opinion, in return for that is why the husband is entitled to the moser. So we can be talking about that he doesn't give her that ma'a kesef. So therefore, the moser doesn't belong to him. Later on though, if she dies and he inherits from her, then it'll belong to him, just like the rest of her nechassim. So that would be a reason to say. So the question is, right now he doesn't own it, but later on he may end up owning it. So is that enough for him to be able to be mafkish it? Reb Meir says yes. Reb Yechim and Nuri says no. And Shmuel says in that context, the halacha is like Rabbi Yechon Hasanler. Alma ainot a makdish davar shloi baloilam. So you see, a person can't be makdish something that doesn't exist yet. So how can Shmuel say over here that, according to Rabbi Yechon Manuri of our Mishnah, the husband should be mefer because the neder may be chal later on? How is it going to be chal later on after they get divorced if right now, Humaisi Adeha, from that time, doesn't exist yet? The chitema, and you're going to answer maybe kika omer halacha kerab yechanim and nuri al hadacha hudkamer. If you're going to say maybe that Shmuel is saying the halacha like rabbi yechanim and nuri only as far as the part about hadacha, only about the part, the extra amount. In other words, in the Mishnah, Rabbi Akiva is saying that belongs to the husband, therefore that hadafa belongs to the husband, therefore he can be mefer. Rabbi Yechanan Nuri is saying that no, I don't accept that reason. I would say that both parts of it, the regular amount and the hadafa, belong to her. And therefore, Rabbi Yechanan Nuri says the only reason to say that he could be made for the neder at all is only because if they get divorced, implying that Rabbi Yechanan Nuri holds that the hadafa belongs to her. Or the other way around. Sorry, Rabbi Akiva holds the hadafa belongs to her, and therefore the husband has to be made for, because otherwise he will be also to have enough from that hadafa. Rabbi Yechanan Nuri would be saying that the hadafa, it's not necessary to, the hadafa belongs to the husband. So you're going to say that maybe when Shmuel says halacha to Rabbi Yechanan Nuri is only regarding that, but then as far as Rabbi Yechanan Nuri's din that he has to be made for because they might get divorced, maybe Shmuel would hold that no, because you can't be makdish davar shelo balar lam. Well, if that's the case, Lema halacha could have given Manuri b'hadafa. Then let Shmuel spell that out. Let him say that he holds the halacha is like a Yechim Manuri when it comes to hadafa. Instead of just saying halacha is like a Yechim Manuri, which makes it sound like the halacha is like everything that he says. Or inami halacha katana kama. Or let Shmuel say the halacha is like the Tanakama, and that he doesn't need to be made for it at all. Meaning, and why would the Tanakama say he doesn't need to be made for it at all? Because he holds even the hadafa belongs to, because he holds that even the hadafa belongs to the husband. Inami ein halacha could have a kiva, or a third possibility, Shmuel could have said his statement. He could say that the halacha is not like Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva holds the hadafa belongs to the woman, and Shmuel would be saying implicitly that no, the hadafa Rabbi Akiva would be saying, we just said that the hadafa belongs to her. Shmuel would be disagreeing with that. So fine, he would say the halacha is not like Rabbi Akiva, and then it's clear. So why would the husband have to be made for the neder? Is not because of the hadafa, because he doesn't need to. So and that would come out clearly then. So he doesn't have to say the halacha is like Rabbi Yechanan and Nuri, which is misleading, which makes it sound like he can be makdish something that's loy bolor. So now we have over here, by the way, the in the Gemara over here, we have the word ein in parenthesis, and there are actually different gersois and different explanations of what the Gemara is saying. The Mefarish over here, in fact, does not have, printed under Rashi's name, does not have the word ein, and in fact, Rashi in the Sugya and Ksubas has a different gersa. And he explains that maybe you would say that he says when the Gemara says you the chitema, you're going to say maybe he says halacha k'rabbi Yechanan Nuri on hadafa, that the husband can be mefer the neder, but not based on Rabbi Yochanan's reason of Shema Yigarshena, but rather based on Rabbi Akiva's reason of Shema Tadifolov. So then the Gemara says, in that case, why do that? Then in that case, you have different ways of stating what you can say. For example, you can say halacha for Rabbi Akiva, because then it comes out he is holding exactly like Rabbi Akiva. He would be saying, according to that explanation, that he's saying be mefer, but not because of Rabbi Yechon Manuri's reason, but rather because of Rabbi Akiva's reason. Well, then say flat out the halacha is like Rabbi Akiva, and then it's very clear what he holds. So we can't say that Shmuel holds that way. It has to be evidently that Shmuel holds the halacha is completely like Rabbi Yechon Manuri. Well, Rabbi Yechon Manuri is saying be mefer because they may get divorced. If they get divorced, the Maisi Odeha of that time is Dover Shaloi Balolam. And according to what we said before, Shmuel says, Alocha is like Rabbi Yechon and Sandler, that you can't be Makdish that anything. So the Gemara says, Ela Amr of Yosef. So rather, Rabbi Yosef says, you're right, but Shiny Koinomus is different when it comes to a case of a Koinom, which is a Neder, Hoyov Odom Osef Peres Havere Olav, since after all, when it comes to a Neder, a person is able to answer fruit of somebody else on himself, so he can't be makdish somebody else's fruit, but nevertheless he can ask for somebody else's fruit on him. The same way he'd be able to ask for something that doesn't exist yet. In other words, it's true that for certain purposes in the Dorim, koinamis are considered like hekdish, but in a way that even stronger than hekdish. Because we see when it comes to hekdish, you have to own the item in order to be makdish it. But when it comes to koinamis, you don't. You can ask for somebody else's payrus on yourself. Therefore, the same thing, even if you don't own it yet, because davar shalav alaylam says Rabbi Yosef, same thing. But Abaya says, what kind of comparison is that? Vishlema Odom Osa Peres Chavere Olav. You know why you could say a person is able to ask for somebody else's Peres to himself? Fine. Share Odom Osa Peres of Chavere. After all, we see the flip side is true. Also, a person can ask for his own Peres on somebody else. In other words, so fine. As long as either you own the Peres or you own yourself, then you can make a, koinam, you can make a nether, and it will be valid. So fine. But how can you ask for something that does not yet exist on somebody else? After all, if neither the Paris nor the Chaver are in your Rishus, you can't ask the Paris on somebody else that neither of the things are in your Rishus. The same thing over here. You're asking it to somebody else. She's saying that my Maisi Yadav are also to you, my husband. The Peres, the Maisi Odeha themselves don't exist yet. So therefore, neither one is in her Rishus. How are you comparing Rabbi Yosef and saying that she should have the ability to ask for that in the first place? Again, if we said that you can be makdish something that's not Bola Olam, then fine. But once we establish that Shmuel says you can't, but the halacha is like Rabbi Yechon HaSandler, then how does this work? Ela, Omer of Huna Bredi Rav Yeshua. So rather, the Gemara gives a different answer. Rav Huna Bredi Rav Yeshua says, but it's true. If it was Dover Shalom Bala'olam, you can't answer it. But here we're talking about Ba'imeres Yikdishu Yaday La'isayim. The case of our Mishnah is not that she made the neder on the Maisi Adeha, which is true, they don't exist yet, but rather that she said, my hands should be Kodesh to the one who made them. And who made her hands? Hashem. So in other words, what she's saying is that my hands are going to be hektish in so far as the Maisi Adeha that they do, that's going to be also to him. So no problem. The hands exist, therefore she's being makdish something that exists. So that would be the equivalent. The same way, for example, you can be makdish a tree where not the tree itself becomes hektish, but rather that the fruit that tree produces in the future is going to be hektish. The same way now, she can be makdish her hands that in the future, the Maisi Adeha that she makes with them are going to be hektish. So yeah, and it doesn't even have to be, the Mukha Yosef points out, it doesn't even have to be that she befeir or says that Lashon. When she uses the expression as an on Mishnah, Koinam Mais Yodav Ficha, we interpret what she's saying to make it a valid neder, given that you can't be matched, something that's no Lutz Loibol Olam, then we reinterpret what she's saying to have that the neder is chal on something that exists right now. It's sort of like we learned earlier in the Masechta, for example, if a person says a koinam, that sleep is going to be also to me, that doesn't necessarily work because sleep is an intangible thing, but if he says a koinam, my eyes will be also to sleep, then that works because the hands exist. The same thing over here.
We don't say that she can't be matched her hands because it's Meshiva to her husband?
That's going to be the Gemara's next question. So that's what you want to ask. So how, if she says that, how is it Kodesh? After all, her hands are meshubad to her husband. So it's still not going to work. So the Gemara says, "De'amra l'chi megarsha." Fine, we're talking about, let's say, where she says that the neder should come into effect only after they get divorced. In fact, there's a different girsa. There's a different girsa in Rishonim that says where she says, "Me'ata ulchshes garish," that it takes effect as of now and after I get divorced. So therefore, in other words, that to a certain extent, it takes effect now. Later, it takes effect fully after they get divorced. But in any case, the point is that yes. So we're talking about that. And again, there's also the possibility Tosfos says elsewhere. We don't mean that she actually says that. We mean we reinterpret her neder to mean that. So therefore, whatever the case, neder is only going to be chal when she gets divorced. Therefore, it can be chal.
What's the difference she says from now? What's the difference she says from now or when she gets divorced? The same thing.
So no, if she says from now, that means while they're still married. If she says from when I get divorced, that the neder is only taking effect after I get divorced, well then fine. In that case, then when she gets divorced, she's not meshubad to her husband anymore.
It's not going to be chal until after they get divorced.
That's what I'm saying. Now the Gemara is we'll continue on this tomorrow. That's the Shem. The Gemara is going to ask. Still, the fact is, right now she's not divorced. How is she able to make a net? If we say that can't be makdish gavur shalabal olam, then how is she going to be able to do that? Right now she's still married to him. So how can the netter be hanging over there and waiting until she actually gets divorced? So we'll take up that point tomorrow. That's the Shem.
I remember we learned something about when it comes to hegdish. That's retin Hashem. So you could be makdish something that didn't come.
We just said Shmuel says that no, you can't be makdish something that doesn't exist yet. You can be makdish something now for the produce that will produce later. You can be makdish a tree that the fruit that it produces later will be hektish, but to be makdish something that doesn't exist yet, that Shmuel is telling us you can't do.
So we don't say hektish. We don't say the hektish has a difference than a regular something regular because it's between Hashem, which owns everything.
So we are going to have, actually, later on in the
story, we're
going to continue the sugya, and tomorrow we're going to deal with the point that ultimately the answer is going to be that hektish is strong enough to override a shibud. So even though she's meshubah to her husband, nevertheless, we're going to end up answering that she has the ability to override that with hektish. But we haven't reached that point yet. Right now, we're assuming that shibud is still stronger than hektish, and more to the point, so it's not just a matter of shibud, it's a matter of davar shelo bal olam, and Shmuel was telling us that you can't be makdish davar shelo bal olam. So we'll continue that way tomorrow. That's the thing.
Regarding the union of, the stolen maser, the 20%.
Mm-hmm.
The Chachamim, if you compare it to Meila, we should impose not only the 20% back, but also a Chomesh.
Yeah, but no, it's not. If a person eats truma that belonged to the Kohen and he did it for Shogig, then he pays the Chomesh. If he doesn't bemaze it, even if he eats truma, but if it's bemaze it, he doesn't pay the Chomesh, he just pays like any regular Ganev or Gazan. And here we were talking about the truma and Maisa wasn't even designated yet. It's still in potential in the pile. So no, the rule of Chomesh wouldn't apply over there.
So in case of Meila, if he does it bemaze it, he doesn't pay the Chomesh? We said that.
Meila also. If a person is Moyo Bemezid, he gets Malkus, he gets Misabide Shemayim, in the case maybe. And then, he doesn't pay the Chomesh either. The Chomesh and the Korban is strictly from Meila Beshogig. But in any case, here we're not even talking about Meila. Truma and Maisa are not Hektish. They have a different definition for them. So the Chomesh for Truma is indeed only if a person eats Truma of a Korban Beshogig.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.